Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, you're also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. Today, we're going to talk about another edition, the latest of Creation Magazine.
That's right. You know, one of the articles that is early in the magazine that was really interesting is called Mars Red Surface is, in quotes, quite recent. As stated by one of the secular scientists that works for the Mars Simulation Laboratory. And this is an article out of space.com.
So they're creationist, right, at space.com?
I have a feeling they're not.
No, they're sort of Darwinian atheistic worldview, Big Bang. And so the Mars, the color red of Mars, as with everything we know, it took billions of years for Mars for the surface to turn red.
Yeah, they said that water flowed over the surface and rusted the rocks, and that's why it looks red, but it took billions of years to do that.
It took billions of years to do that, and they were saying that Mars had a global flood, or maybe most of Mars was underwater, and Fred, the Earth is two-thirds underwater, and they deny that the Earth ever had a global flood, but Mars, which is bone dry, they say had a global flood.
Yeah.
But so did it take the chemical process to turn the Mars rock red? Would it really take billions of years?
Well, these scientists were able to do it in 7 months in their laboratory.
7 months?
By simulating, you know, wind and...
And the chemical composition of Mars.
That's right.
And they turned the surface material red in seven billion years?
Basically, gently tumbled quartz and sand and some other things.
7 months. It turned red like Mars.
7 months.
So their conclusion then... Could I share their conclusion?
Yeah. Sure.
In space.com, so they said, so it turns out it wasn't billions of years. It took only millions of years instead of billions of years.
So they still take 7 months and they make it millions of years. They still have to have that millions and millions. It's that Carl Sagan.
Fred, how do they stretch 7 months into millions of years? It's just hysterical. I think when they sit down to type, their fingers automatically... They'd automatically do millions and millions of years ago. It just happens.
They have got a Carl Sagan syndrome in their mind.
Right.
Millions and millions. They can't get that. Hey, this was 7 months they were able to reproduce the Mars surface.
So this current issue of Creation Magazine is the July to September 2010 issue. And the next article in here is about flowering plants. Fred, my wife, Cheryl, she loves flowers.
A woman likes flowers?
Women love flowers. They like their husband to give them flowers. I figured out why.
Why is that? This would be good.
Because they serve absolutely no purpose. See, guys like tools. I like, if my wife gives me some RAM for my computer, I'm happy. She's given me something useful. A woman does not want something useful. She wants something that has absolutely no purpose. So she knows the only reason you're giving it is because you love her. That's it.
Wow.
No other reason.
Okay.
So women like flowering plants. I mean, I think they're cool, but I like
the way... They smell good for a while.
Yeah. And then you got to clip them and feed them and water them.
But you know, Darwin called these flowering plants abominable mystery.
He sure did, because in the fossil record, there's no evidence that they evolved. They're just plunk. There they are in the rock, fossils. And so if you read Nature magazine, the motherlode of evolutionary worldview, it turns out it's still an abominable mystery, Fred, because they are saying regardless of the sophisticated techniques they're using, they're mystified. It doesn't appear, even when they study the DNA, it doesn't appear that we can locate a close relative of flowering plants. And that's from a botanist who's, you know, a famous evolutionist. And Fred, out of the Swedish Museum of Natural History, they're generating 3D images of fossils, the inner parts of the fossils. And they're saying we cannot find what the basic form is. The ancestor just isn't there.
It just isn't there.
And then they quote Cornell University saying, one of their evolutionists, I'm starting to worry that it transformed without intermediaries.
Boy, don't we hear this a lot from the evolutionists? So, you know, Darwin said he wanted to see this whole problem solved. Has it been solved?
Has it been solved? They've been looking for fossils for 150. How long have they been? They've been looking for fossils since Darwin's book for 150 million years.
Uh-oh, the Carl Sagan syndrome has hit your brain.
It's set in. They've been looking for 150 million years, and they're never going to find the ancestor to flowering plants because there were none. Forget about flowers. How about vertebrates, Fred? Animals with a backbone versus invertebrates. There are no transitions to backbones.
And that's a huge leap from invertebrate to vertebrate. You think of the complexity, and yet they're finding vertebrates in the Cambrian strata of rock where they were supposed to be millions of years. There's that millions again.
Yeah.
But now, with finding vertebrates in the Cambrian, what a problem that is.
Where do they come from? All right. So this is fun. Now, Fred, a listener to Real Science Friday sent a question via email. You brought his email in?
Yeah, so I got an email from a listener, Tim Bowen, and he mentioned that he's downloaded many of our Science Friday shows and has been enjoying them.
Well, praise the Lord. It's encouraging to hear.
That's right. And he had a question about debates. He wanted to know if there are any debates that we could download. And I know that you've had some fantastic debates. I remember seeing one on TV back in the mid-90s, maybe in the 1996, late 97, late 90s.
Yeah, mid to late. Yeah, with who was that?
Eugenie Scott.
Eugenie Scott, one of the world's leading anti-creationists.
That's right.
And that debate was hysterical.
It was hysterical, and I have a feeling that she doesn't publish that debate.
She doesn't sell it.
But
we
you do.
And the title of that debate, Bob Debates an Evolutionary Scientist, and that was a lot of fun. And it turns out that it was mostly about junk DNA, finally. And 10 years later, the evidence is the junk is not junk.
That's right.
And that was her number one best evidence.
It was her best evidence
against creation.
And you made a prediction on that show.
A prediction that as we learn more, we're just beginning to learn. And she said, oh, no, we've learned everything we'll ever need to know this is junk.
Yeah.
I said, Eugenie, I'm writing down the date and the time. Do you want to take that back? You're a PhD scientist. You want to take that back? So it was really fun. So,
and it's humorous, too, because she kept complaining about her cat during the debate. And I think she was just trying to get out of there because you were slaughtering her.
I don't debate. I'm here with my cat.
Yeah.
All right, Eugenie, it's obvious you don't debate.
Well, another debate that I thought was excellent was an Age of the Earth debate that you had with the local Hugh Ross Reasons to Believe group.
The Old Earth Creationist group. That was a fun debate in front of an audience of 100 people. Old Earthers and Young Earthers in the audience. And then, Fred, you and I gave a presentation. We basically reenacted that debate at a monthly meeting of the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And we sell that debate, both of these, we sell them online at kgov.com.
And does Reasons to Believe, do they sell the debate?
No.
Okay, so that should be a good indication as to who... who won that debate?
That was a lot of fun. And John Nickel, who's a geophysicist, he was and a mathematician. We debated the two of them. And he recently, I contacted him because of all the earthquakes. And after the debate, he said, Bob, if you young earthers are right, then we should be giving stronger earthquake warnings to governments. And I said, John, that's exactly true. And since our debate, Fred, there have been hundreds of thousands of people have died in massive earthquakes around the world. And I emailed all those statistics to John, and he said, could I get a copy of that debate? So we just sent it to him.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, I know that you've also had a possible encounter with P.Z. Myers. It hasn't really happened, but pretty interesting story.
P.Z. Myers, world-renowned evolutionist. Fred, it was your fault. You set up an interview with Dr. Jerry Bergman in this studio on Real Science Friday.
Oh, and he's debated P.Z. Myers.
Yeah. Jerry Bergman has debated P.Z. Myers. And so P.Z. Myers blogged, and the title was Bob Enyart Wants Me to Respect His Intelligence. And I don't know about that, but Fred, it was funny because I did debate an evolutionist from Britain, and so much of this is available online at kgov.com, James Hannum. And James wrote the most glowing review of the debate, very kind, and P.Z. Myers repeated the best of it on his blog, and then he proceeded to an ad hominem attack. But, you know, it was really fun because we took our Trochlea Challenge and we customized it, the PZ Myers Trochlea Challenge. We put it on PZ's blog, and so far he hasn't responded to our challenge of how this simple sling and the muscle and the eye could have formed by evolution.
Yeah, you really got to go out to the website, kgov.com, and look at the trochlea. I mean, it is a really cool picture, a good witnessing tool. How did that little piece of tissue get through that sling to hold the eye in place?
Yeah, it was just great.
So, I mean, that can't happen. That has to happen all at once, which isn't evolution.
Yeah, the sling has to be functional or not. It has to be minimally functional before it can be selected by nature. And so it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Bob, I know you've had a few other debates.
Oh, yeah, quite a few. Michael Shermer, Scientific American, ABC's Reginald Finley, the infidel guy. And in fact, just this morning, Fred, I was on Fox 31 in Colorado about the debate I had yesterday with the Texas atheist who made the news because he was getting people to trade in Bibles for pornography.
Oh, man.
And I got to go on Fox 31 for 10 minutes and talk about how despicable that is. One woman called in and she said, I would not trade my garbage for porn, and I wouldn't trade my Bible for gold and silver.
Wow, what a comment.
What a beautiful comment. Yeah. All right, so sure, there are a lot of debates with atheists. You could get a lot of them for free at kgov.com or go to our store and purchase some of these that we produced on DVD and MP3 CDs. They're really fun.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're excellent. So Tim Bowen also had a question in his email that I thought would be a good opportunity to answer it in the show.
His Plus, question.
Yeah, dovetails real nicely into the next article we were going to talk about in Creation Magazine. He asks, as a newbie questioning evolution, a recent topic I came across is that there are many species that have remained unchanged for millions of years and no change in their fossils from living specimens.
Ooh.
Strange, huh?
Strange,
yeah,
huh?
It is.
He's right. Fred, over and over, I see these evolutionary documentaries, and they say, well, look at this squid, and it's virtually unchanged from 100 million years ago. And by virtually unchanged, they mean no change at all.
It's the same thing.
It's the same. I mean, well, you look at two dogs, and they're different, but there's no evolutionary change for 100 million years. And Tim is smart. He's saying, what's with that?
Yeah. And, you know, again, we find them all the time. I remember not that long ago an article about bats that were supposed to be 80 million years old that are remarkably similar to bats today.
Yeah.
So this article in the Creation Magazine.
And spiders and insects inside of amber and mosquitoes and the whole bit.
You know, the only difference most of the time with these animals are finding in the fossil record is they're a lot bigger.
There was,
you know, huge dragonflies, a crocodile they found that's five times bigger than any crocodile that's alive today by five times the amount.
Yeah, and so larger, typically evolutionists say, well, it gets bigger as it evolves. Like the horse started small and it got bigger. And like Lucy was a little 3 foot tall chimp and she evolved into human beings.
Yeah, like how the Chihuahua evolved into the Saint Bernard.
Yeah,
oh, wait, they're
right.
Not. Yeah.
Oh,
okay. See, yeah. See, they.
So anyway, but in reality, in the fossil record, if there's any difference between plants and animals a long time ago versus today, is there's a trend toward they've become smaller.
Yeah, it's like almost de-evolution in a sense.
Yeah.
So the title of the article, it's written by Michael Ord, who, by the way, has spoken several times at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. He's, like Jerry Bergman, a very prolific writer in the creation literature.
And that's here in the Denver area once a month on a Friday night.
Friday night, 7 o'clock at Bethlehem Lutheran Church at roughly Wadsworth and 21st Avenue.
Yeah, and you could check it out online.
At youngearth.org.
Youngearth.org. All right.
Okay.
So what's this article about fossils that are found in the wrong place?
Yeah, are they ever found in the wrong place? And so Michael Ord gives some of the classic examples. For example, a wallaby pine in Australia.
Yeah, was extinct for millions of years, and there it is growing in Australia.
Yeah, they end up finding one, and it's supposed to be 150 million years ago it went extinct. Mm. And here they find one that's exactly the same as this fossil.
And it's like the coelacanth fish that it was extinct millions of years ago, and then a guy finds it in Madagascar in a fish store. There it is out on a shelf. He's like, boy, that fish went extinct.
Did it have legs?
No.
Okay.
But
well, remember, it was supposed to have legs before they found it.
But, Fred, it looks gnarly. And because it looks gnarly, the evolutionists say it went extinct 50 million years ago. And it's not. Now they know that coelacanth are there.
Yeah.
How about pollen? Pollen is associated with trees that has been found in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, fossilized in the lowest layers.
Wait a minute. The bottom of the Grand Canyon, pollen from trees? Wouldn't trees have evolved later? Did the trees evolve before dirt?
They need the insects, and they need the birds and all, and cross-pollination, and that's all so sophisticated. And this article really does a great job of saying over and over, they used to say, for example, Fred, you know how the universe got a billion years older every few years for a while there?
Yeah.
When I went to school, the universe was 12 billion years old, then it was 13 billion, then it was 14 billion. It just kept getting older every like 4 or 5 years. Well, supposedly the first life, the first cells with a nucleus evolved a billion years ago. Well, Fred, in the last few years, if you weren't watching, they pushed it back to 2.7 billion years.
That's right.
And so where are
because
those?
Because they keep finding stuff out of place.
Stuff's out of place all over. And that's because the fossils were laid down by the global flood and all that tumult. And so now they have a problem. There are no fossils for 2 billion years of evolution, didn't leave any fossils.
That's right. I mean, Michael Lord asks a great question. Where are the remains of all the billions of organisms with cells that lived between 2.7 billion years ago and the time of the Cambrian Big Bang? I mean, there's like now there's this huge big gap, and they have to cook up stories again to try to explain it.
And they've done this now with vertebrates and land plants and with winged insects. They got to push them back. They say, oh, sharks have evolved 25 million years earlier than we thought. Oh, land plants, 25 million years earlier. Vertebrates, insects, 80 million years earlier, because, Fred, they're making this up as they go along, because in reality, the global flood buried billions of living creatures and plants in almost a mile-deep sedimentary layer all over the world.
Well, continents. And they mentioned a sponge that's 220 million years old. I didn't know that, you know, men and women were alive, you know, our wives were alive back then. I mean, I use a hose. Maybe they'll find a hose that's 220 million years old. That's what I use in the garage. I don't use a sponge. You know, guys don't use sponges. They use hoses.
That's right. So, yeah, it turns out a sponge. I grew up in New Jersey, you know. I didn't know a sponge actually grew. I thought everything came from the store. Everything. So I had a rude awakening, Fred, when I started studying science after I graduated from a public high school.
Oh, man.
But it was a rude awakening. It was fun. So, Fred, let's continue with the articles. And thank you, Tim Bowen, for writing in. And, yeah, great point. There are things that are supposedly hundreds of millions of years old that haven't changed.
That's right. And you know, Mike Lord mentions that we've only touched on a handful of these. There's a lot more that we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
They find them all the time.
Yeah.
Out of place fossils.
That's right. And we now find soft tissue dinosaurs.
Boy, is that out of place or what?
Like T-Rex and hadrosaurs. And so there's so much evidence, a world full of evidence that the Bible is right and that Darwin and the Big Bang are wrong.
That's right. Wrong by a mile. Yeah. By millions and millions of years, they're wrong.
So, Fred, you wanted to reference Richard Dawkins' quote. He's the leading atheist evolutionist in the world right now, Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, probably the leading antagonist against creationists, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And he made a pretty surprising quote here, and they quoted him in this magazine. He said that there are no Christians, as far as I know, blowing up buildings. I'm not aware of any Christian suicide bombers.
Whoa, so he's sort of slamming the Muslims for being, it's their jihad, right? Their holy war against Christians and Jews. They're targeting children. So you mean Richard Dawkins said this?
Yeah, I mean, he went on to say again, slamming Islam directly and others too. I'm not aware of any major Christian denomination that believes the penalty for apostasy is death.
That you could put to death someone who rejects Jesus Christ.
That's right.
We don't believe that.
Yeah, and Islam does teach that in the Quran, doesn't it?
Yeah. And this quote, Fred, I could report to the audience, you are not making this up. It sounds like you are.
Yeah.
But this is from the London Times. It's online, timesonline.com. And so, wow. So, but Richard Dawkins, he despises Christianity.
Yeah, he does. He really does. I mean, he spent many years you know, with these really lame evolution arguments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's, again, a vowed atheist. I think he's been, what, married five different times. Mm-hmm. He definitely walks a worldview that isn't biblical.
And so he says in here, I have mixed feelings about the decline of Christianity, because even though he thinks Christianity is bad, and he says it here, he says still the decline of Christianity might be a bulwark against something else. Something worse to him.
Yep.
But he's right. Christianity, as we win people to Jesus Christ, that's part of national defense, let alone their own eternal soul. That's part of safety and the welfare of billions of people, because Christianity is true.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just seems to be, you know, one of Satan's tactics is this scare tactic. We're going to kill you if you leave the faith. And, you know, Islam's not the only religion that taught that, Bob. Mm. I know that in the last century, people would be surprised to know that that was the doctrine of the Mormons.
Mm. Wow. That is surprising. Yeah. Now they just have Mitt Romney. So, Fred, then an article about the bearded lady syndrome.
Bearded lady syndrome, yes.
Yeah, I was attracted to Cheryl, my wife, because she didn't have a beard.
Yeah, and I was same with my wife.
See, you spot those women that don't have beards. It's something how God made us different. And so here and there you have some bearded women, like the whole syndrome appeared in the medical literature with a Mexican-born woman, Julia Pastrana. And now scientists in China are studying a family that have bearded women in their family. Mm-hmm. And the evolutionists, you know what they say? They say, this is a throwback to our hairy ancestors.
Yeah, that we were all once this way, and it's just this, yeah.
Yeah, we were apes, and it's a throwback. So it turns out that as they're studying their DNA, Fred, they have found the exact mutation, the exact DNA deletions that are associated with a bearded woman. And so once again, it is an understandable mutation. Something broke,
mm-hmm.
and that's why these women have beards.
Yeah, it's not evolution. If anything, it's de-evolution. It's a genetic disorder. Something, again, broke. And I can't stress enough the times I've debated, in many cases, PhD scientists who have used, and twice, on two different times, used cancer as an argument for evolution. That's evident. Obviously, cancer is obviously a detrimental effect.
Right.
It's a loss of information.
Yeah, cancer.
But it's change. So that's evolution.
Right. It's a bait and switch game, as Dr. Sarfati points mm-hmm. out, that evolution says we went from a microbe to man, from a single cell to a human being with 10 trillion cells. To do that, you need an incredible increase in information. Both sides agree that you can have disease, that things break down. The law of entropy tells us things naturally break down. We agree. So because they don't have evidence for evolution, they look at disease and they say disease is great evidence for evolution.
Oh, yeah, like sickle cell anemia. They use that one often.
Yeah.
So it's
cowardice to make that argument, because they have to show how there are new organs forming.
You know, if there's compelling evidence for evolution, why do they have to stoop to these bait and switch games?
Right, because it's not there.
Yeah. So, you know, speaking of genetic information and the increasing genetic information to explain evolution, boy, they'll have a really hard time with the drafts. And I really like this article, Bob, because kind of has a little history between you and I. And the very first time I saw your TV show, probably within the first month of seeing it, you brought up an example of the giraffe as an argument for intelligent design.
Yeah,
and
because the giraffe's neck is so long that when he bends, his heart is 2-3 feet big to get the blood up there. And when he bends over to take a drink, if his heart pumped, literally his brains would blow out.
That's right. And if you go to my website, evolutionfairytale.com, you'll
great
get to
site.
See the exploding giraffe head. So how do the evolutionists explain that? And so what God did in his incredible wisdom is there's valves in the giraffe's neck so that when he puts his head down, those valves close, and there's enough blood in the giraffe's head so that he can get a drink of water for quite a period of time, but his head doesn't explode. And the same thing, so when he puts his head back up, the valves open, and so now the blood can flow to the brain. And not only that, there's the legs that have very powerful mechanism to keep blood from shooting out the bottom of the giraffe's legs. I mean, there's all this intelligent design that has to go into it.
Right. And if the giraffe would have had that need before he had the mechanisms, he would have never evolved.
That's right. So they this article is about how the giraffe didn't get its neck. And it's funny, you know, some of the original ideas about the giraffe was that they evolved their long necks because it allowed them to reach leaves that smaller animals couldn't.
Yeah, right. The giraffes with the long necks would be able to eat with the leaves on tops of trees. But how about all the baby giraffes, Fred, when they get hungry?
Yeah.
And how about all the little creatures that didn't die out? So it's just
maybe
so...
mama giraffe held up the little giraffe to...
Yeah.
Well, here's how
it's like learning science on the Cartoon Network. That's what evolution is like.
Yeah, cartoon theory. So, but they realized that's not true because they observed that giraffes weren't, where they were kind of picking different kinds of leaves. They weren't going for the high ones. There's a variety that they select. So that was disproven. And so here's this other idea that they've got now, which I think is hilarious. So they pointed out
they got to figure out why the giraffe has a long neck.
Yeah. So what happens is giraffes, they fight with each other by banging their necks together. Now,
they
happen
wrestle.
To. Yeah, they do. And I saw a recent show. We were on vacation here, and I was watching, I don't know what channel, or it was World's Dumbest Brawls. I don't know if people have seen some
World's
of those.
World's Dumbest Brawls.
Yeah, they're doing all these World's Dumbest things, you know, like dumbest criminals, this and that, dumbest car accidents, whatever. They had a Dumbest Brawls, and most of them are human encounters. Well, they had one animal encounter, and it was these two giraffes that were butting their necks together. So according to the evolutionists, that's how they're improving their species. So they're by necking and head clubbing each other, those with the longest necks and heaviest heads tend to be the victors. And hence, they're the ones that are going to evolve more. They're going to be the ones that are naturally selected for.
Okay, so the guys fight, they wrestle, they bang their heads together, they bang their necks on each other, and that's how they evolved. And they're saying the female giraffes were attracted to that.
Yeah, it must be. But then they discovered that there's a problem with that.
Mm.
The necks should be more exaggerated, larger in males than females if this theory was true.
Oh, yeah.
But they're finding out that's not the case at all. They're the same.
Wow.
There's no distinct difference at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. Over and over and over, when they come up, like Darwin said, the peacock feathers evolved for sex selection. The females like the peacocks with a fancy plumage. And it turns out, after years of study in Japan, they said, not really. The females couldn't care less.
Yeah.
It's just, and that was the peacock. He invented the theory to explain the peacock, and it doesn't. And it doesn't explain the giraffe. Creation is fun, Fred.
Absolutely.
The liberals and the atheists, what they have going against them is reality. We have reality, and God's word is true. So reality backs up the Bible at every turn. It is just so much fun.
Yes, it is. We definitely have the truth on our side.
Yeah. So, Fred, there's so much more to cover, but we're out of time for this episode of Real Science Friday. Let's do another real soon, maybe next week.
Sounds great. I'm all for it.
All right. Our website is kgov.com. At the top, just click on Real Science Friday. You can find dozens of these shows. You could email one to a friend of yours, let them check it out, and please help out financially, kgov.com.